I think a lot of it in the beginning is a confidence lift. Getting to a stage basically where you sort of think, if not me, then who? And thinking of it again and again and sort of saying like, this is so, so obvious. How is this not a big thing?
Hey everybody, welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. Today, I'm talking to Matthew from Squid. Squid are a Rising Stars winner from season 10. Each season, I pick a company I feel are about to break out. Squid only started a couple of years ago, but their growth has been absolutely monstrous in 2 years. So Squid are my pick for the Rising Star of this season. It's an incredible chat. Matthew is a deeply intelligent guy. Clearly thinks about things on a very, very different perspective. Squid is the loyalty app you'll see in coffee shops all over Ireland. So we discuss their rapid growth, how they think about scaling, and how much fundraising they've done to date. This is an incredible episode. You're going to enjoy this one. Here's our rising star for season 10, Matthew from Squid. This week's episode is brought to you by Sage. Sage is the number one provider of payroll, finance, and HR software to small and medium-sized enterprises all across the globe. To find more about Sage, click the link in the description below. Now, on today's episode. Matthew, welcome to the pod.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Moon, for having me on.
Now, just before the lawyers send us any letters, not Squid Games, Squid.
No, we've had that before, all right. Yep. Yeah, no, Squid. Squid, nothing to do with Squid Game at all. But we did have, I mentioned that to you earlier, that we had a good instance with being delisted based on trademark infringement or whatever it was. But geez, that was some nightmare when that happened to me.
On the rank of the most stressful times in your life, what was that like?
Yeah, it's definitely, definitely up there.
What happened?
We just woke up on a given morning and the Google seemed to be doing a mass clear out of, I don't know if you remember the Squid Game craze and mm-hmm. everyone was just Squid Game this and, you know, but we literally just woke up and we just had all these complaints, basically. All these businesses going on as to like, we can't download the app. Like people are coming in and they can't download it. And we kind of went, what? And then looked at the app store. And with these emails basically saying, you know, you've been delisted based on copyright infringement or something.
Wow.
And like our point, you know.
I mean, and that was the first you'd heard of it?
It was literally just a case of kind of waking up and then like just hearing all these things back as to like, this is happening. And it was terrifying. It was genuinely terrifying. It was real, kind of show, I suppose, of how much you rely on these different, you know, your Apples and your Googles basically. But yeah, thank God. Anyway, we got it sorted. I suppose, like, again, I kind of mentioned this, but I think the positive in hindsight was the sheer volume of complaints, actually, in some ways. It was kind of like, now that it's all behind, it was really cool in some ways to see how much people cared, you know, that they couldn't use the app, that they couldn't, the businesses getting onto us. We had, you know, thousands and thousands of people just saying, it's gone, where is it? Get it sorted kind of stuff. And so we were
amazing
talking to Google basically, could be pleased. We physically turned up at Google as well. Being like, we've been here way before this thing was released.
How long were you in operation at that time?
Oh, Jesus. I couldn't give you an exact figure. Maybe
roughly like
a year and a half or so.
Okay.
Say something.
So at least you had the mark, or at least you were like, look.
Yeah, we've definitely
been here since X time.
Squid Game. That was not the...
But isn't it incredible how like the butterfly effect of something happening over in California flaps its wings and then suddenly you wake up in Dublin and you're like, oh no, half our business is gone.
Exactly. And I think, I can't remember exactly how we got it fixed, but it was someone in Japan or something bizarre like that who came to the rescue at the end of the day.
Naturally. Yeah, of course.
Exactly. But so, yeah, there was a real kind of roundabout way of getting into it. And again, I think the other problem was just seeing like big enterprise as well. When you start seeing like Google is so fragmented into all these different sections. So we'd know loads of people who work in Google. So our first port of call was going back, reply back to the thing and sort of going, we're not. And then trying to tap up like people who we knew. But they all pretty much had the same answer about, oh, that's not us. Yeah. You know what I mean? That's somebody else. But
they're like different businesses within a business.
Exactly. Yeah. Outwardly, we were kind of thinking Google is Google, if you know what I mean. No, it's not at all. It's exactly as you were saying. It's fragmented into all these different parts. But it was, that was an experience. I suppose it's all part of the fun of kind of the ups and downs. And
so what is Squid?
So Squid, basically, what we do is we make customized loyalty schemes for different brands, and then we host all their loyalty cards in one app for ease of engagement, basically. So I suppose it was a little bit of kind of solve your own problem that I think most people are probably familiar with it, just the kind of thinking of like loyalty schemes in theory would be nice if you use them, but they're just so clunky and awkward and, you know, they're just awful. Like you, most people have been there in the queue where if somebody comes up and they sort of say, do you have a loyalty card? No. Would you like one? And your brain's kind of defaulted to go no. But really, again, it's not that you're saying that you wouldn't like the loyalty card. It's more that you're just going, I don't want to sign up to this thing. I don't want people to push this thing at me. And then after that, like how many loyalty cards can I actually keep or apps or whatever it is, if you know what I mean? So that, I suppose, was the big starting point that we went from is, can we just remove that sign up, make it basically that it just becomes dead easy to, if you want into a loyalty scheme, just bang and you're in. And then collapse all the apps or cards and apps or whatever it is into one thing. And thereafter, basically just making every interaction with a loyalty scheme just a single tap. So single tap to sign up, to collect stamps or points, and to redeem as well. So just completely simplifying it from the consumer's experience, basically.
It is simple. I'm a squitter. I use it in all the Wicklow coffee shops that go into it. Like, it's everywhere. Anyone listening, it's the little kind of circular device you see underneath nearly every till in coffee shop that I go into now. It's, you're everywhere. It would seem. I know we had this conversation over lunch. You're like, oh, a long way to go. But like, in relative terms, your growth has been pretty explosive.
Yeah, I think the, myself and co-founder Katie, we started this straight out of college. So we had no experience. So I suppose the big thing for us has just been all the learnings and constant learnings. And at every stage you learn more and you find out that there's more and more to learn. But I suppose we had one guy in particular, this guy, Andrew O'Shaughnessy, and he, you know, in very simple terms, he basically broke it down into, look, there's two phases for a company. One is achieving product market fit, and the second stage is scaling. But that part of kind of getting product market fit, of basically like, have we solved a problem for a market? When your market's massive, which with loyalty, like it's arguably the biggest untapped market in the world, it's very, very difficult to kind of like keep on working out, okay, when is this bang on?
Yeah.
So a lot of kind of how we've been looking at the scaling to date is just constantly like sort of testing, like, is this right? Is this still right? If you know what I mean? And now basically to your point, we're in, you know, we went very much after kind of coffee and that sort of stuff. Now we're in about 40% of Irish coffee shops. We've started as well in UK, Australia, and we've started getting a bunch of inbounds as well from different countries and that kind of thing, which is exciting, but.
Magic, it's working.
It's working, yeah.
When did you start? Because you speak like a very established founder, like you're very confident in your story. When did you start, though?
I don't know about that, first of all, but we started basically just before COVID.
So yeah, I was trying to set up the softball for you, going, look, this is so new, because I think anyone from the outside looking in would go, oh, this is obviously a very established company. You know, you see it everywhere. You just kind of assume you project brilliance onto it. So just before COVID.
So it was just before COVID, which was, again, back to that kind of like getting product market fit thing. It was like we did at least have a little bit, you know, of a 2 month or so spell of kind of being able to get the product out and just learn and learn and learn and watch and learn and all that kind of stuff as to how do people interact with it? What do they like? What do they not like? But then obviously lockdown happened, and then suddenly that's all taken away from you. It's all restricted. It's all online, or these places are closed, or people are afraid to just, you know, go outside, basically.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, I mean, as I was saying, we have very much focused on that sort of stage of, we need to make sure that we get product market fit before scaling. And so with COVID in there, it was really, really difficult, particularly international stuff. So I remember when we got our first sales in places like the UK, but we're all doing it from our house, if you know what I mean. Trying to work out, you know, again, it's just a different market. It's a new market. And thinking that kind of way of like, well, is the UK market the same as the Irish market? Do people think about loyalty the same way? Do they respond the same way? What do businesses think? What do consumers think?
Where did the idea come from? Because like it's such an obvious idea. You're like, yeah, this is a no-brainer. But again, it's so obvious. You're nearly going, oh, probably someone's already doing that, and it's such a big problem. So how did you and Katie go, yep, this is the problem, yeah, we're going
to
tackle it?
Well, to go back to the beginning, I suppose, really, we initially set up with just the idea of exactly what you were saying. Like, it seemed such an obvious problem that it was kind of in the back of our minds all through college. And so we you know, there was definitely a theme going around of kind of like aggregating everything into one app, be it Airbnb, music, Netflix, all this kind of stuff. It was all in one kind of thing. And we were trying to think, like, what hasn't been done? And loyalty was just such a glaring kind of like, that's so obvious. Why isn't there an app that does that?
Were you and Katie actively planning to start a business? Was this just, what I'm trying to figure out is, everyone is always trying to figure out the moment. What was the moment when, oh yeah, we're going to start the business? And I think people overthink it. But how did you and Katie come up with this initially? Like, were you always planning to start a business together, or what was the genesis?
The big moment for us was when, me and Katie met in college basically. And the big moment I think was when we went on Erasmus. And it was that sort of like change in thinking of, we've spent all our time in Ireland and, yeah, you know, we had a very kind of Irish centric sort of outlook on the world. And then all of a sudden we were in Berkeley in California. And the first thing that would strike you if you go there is tech, just everywhere. There's so much innovation. There's so much kind of stuff going on. Like, I remember one day kind of walking down the street and there's a little robot with a cup of coffee on it beside you, if you know what I mean. But people don't look at it twice. It's just sort of normal. It's just there's someone figuring something out, if you know what I mean. And I suppose it was there again that we kind of had the more confidence. I think a lot of it in the beginning is a confidence lift, as to kind of like getting to a stage basically where you sort of think, like, what, if not me, then who, if you know what I mean, basically kind of stuff. And just again, just thinking of it again and again and sort of saying, like, this is so, so obvious. How is this not a big thing? And then coming back to Ireland, and then basically we wrapped up in college, and we were on this scholarship thing together in college. And so me and Katie would literally work on everything together through college. So we had this recipe of working together, and we knew it worked kind of stuff. So the idea of working together and starting something together just seemed a really obvious step. But then it was Katie. So I suppose I was probably more driving on the kind of like, this is so obvious, we should go and do this. But Katie, I think Katie's incredibly intelligent. And the main thing that she spotted was, like, it's all to do with the interaction. The interaction is broken, basically. So let's just make it so that it's really, really, really simple. And so she came up with this idea of like the tapping, basically, the kind of the idea of just, we'll make everything one tap. And then even that sort of like, you know, in fairness to Katie, what I think is quite a simple like deployment, we just use a sticker, basically. So it's an NFC sticker. It's the same as in tap technology. And through that, it just kind of works out, okay, this is, I'm supposed to be at this counter. I'm this tag for this given business. But then on the back end of that, you can just keep adding and adding and adding more stuff. You know, then we needed, again, it was in Katie's kitchen that she just had one of those kind of glass jars, and it had a cork kind of cap on top of it. And she went, something like this would be pretty handy. So then we just started ordering, you know, now we have thousands of them coming in. We have this place in Italy that supplies us with just loads of these things. We probably completely changed their thing, you know.
Like, who are these guys in Ireland making all these jars?
They're just obsessed with water. Exactly. So
I love that story though, because it just shows incredible clarity of thought to go, okay, this is a problem. Step one, step two, step three, step four. These are all the steps we're going to take. You broke it down to the very core steps, because that's the big issue. How do you tackle, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? It's how do you tackle a global massive problem?
And I think that that has been definitely a kind of a learning for us as well, is that as soon as we launched and we started getting going, you start to get all this interest basically from different companies, which again, when we were kind of, you know, early and young founders, definitely is distracting. So you get huge behemoth kind of payment companies, your Googles, your food ordering companies, tipping companies, you know, you name it, basically, they've all gotten on and they're like, I've seen that thing, if you know what I mean. What are you thinking? What are your thoughts on this sort of stuff? And so it's all just kind of bright lights, if you know what I mean, that you kind of
think,
Jesus, what if we went this way? So there's definitely been a lot of learning and kind of discipline into like trying to keep that, exactly what you were saying, that focus on like, what we do is basically we make it simpler to engage in loyalty schemes. So let's just keep on rolling that out. And we started with coffee, but now we're in a kind of a different phase, I suppose, now that we've taken on a new CTO, basically, who's come in. And so now we're going to start serving all retail types. So we're going to go after, you know, basically everything, absolutely every different business. But it was coffee was the entry point, I suppose, for us. And we're going after that into different markets, but then we can move up the retail ladder basically into different
things. I love that. You started with a very clear, identifiable niche, and coffee is one of those. Definitely for me, it's a habit. Every day you're going to get that coffee. And I think if you're baking squid into that, that's an incredibly smart place to start.
I suppose that's our thinking basically, is that for such a kind of an emergent market like coffee's, I was talking to a guy and I thought he nailed it on the head, that coffee is the new wine. So like, you know, whereas like a generation ago people were wine snobs basically, if you know what I mean, they knew everything to do with wine. Now people know everything to do with coffee and they're really picky on what coffee they like and what they don't and that sort of stuff. But again, I was kind of amazed at just like coffee is a wildly underserved market from a tech perspective. So there's loads of different businesses building stuff for restaurants and the likes. That area is just so cluttered.
That's a fair point, actually. Yeah, when you think about it like that, yeah.
So again, it was kind of that thinking of like, how do you dip your toes into this big pool, if you know what I mean? Like the thinking basically has been, well, let's go after coffee. That's where you lay the foundations. But the logic has always been, listen, the same people who drink coffee, they also shop in clothes shops, they shop in supermarkets, they shop in petrol, they shop in all this kind of stuff. So, you know, if we basically can be an attractive solution to a coffee drinker, well, then that basically, you start getting the attention of the bigger brands. And like we have basically proven that in Ireland and in UK and the rest, that we've had the bigger chains in different areas come on to us and say, can I have this for my petrol? Can I have it for my supermarket? Can I have it, you know, for all these different areas?
Why do they want it, to ask the obvious question?
The simple answer is the engagement rate, basically. So people use Squid more often than they use other loyalty schemes. The reason, again, that we think that is basically it's just very easy to use. So, you know, again, from in really, really simple terms, if you're a retail business and you're thinking, okay, any retail business is in a highly competitive market by nature. So like what's stopping another clothes shop from opening up? Absolutely nothing. What's stopping another coffee shop from nothing, if you know what I mean? So they're all competing for footfall, basically. Again, you know, to compare something like tech and retail, the realistic problem for a retail business is you're not, if you're located in Dublin, let's say, like you're not trying to attract different customers from London or from afar, basically, in the same way that a tech business would be trying to expand. It's who's there. It's who's around you, basically. And again, it's all predicated on them coming back. So that thing again of basically, if we can help, like they, in fairness, we don't do the sign up and we don't do the loyalty part. That's the business themselves, is that they've basically gone, we're happy to do a loyalty scheme. We're happy to reward people who come back more often, basically. So that they've already established that. We just make it easier for people to interact and engage with that. But then when that works, there's, you know, I'm a bit of a cliche again there, but there's loads of stats out there as to the power and the impact of loyalty. Again, in just simple terms, like imagine if everyone was buying twice as often, what that would do to your bottom line. It would just double. But you don't have to do all this mad outreach. You don't have to do all this mad marketing. It's very focused, kind of just like, you've been here before, come back. And so I suppose that's one of the kind of the small add-ons that we've been doing, is sort of the working on this marketing part. But again, like what we're really trying to get is that sort of very human feel, I think, for like when we got started in the beginning, another big learning for me and Katie was the sheer level of passion that is in every retail business that we were talking to. And, you know, before starting Squid, we would just walk past what were shop fronts to us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But then you'd go in and you'd talk to them and they just like, again, it's just gushing passion, basically, as to like, you wouldn't believe the amount we had to do to find the branding we did, you know, with this person or that person. And we would travel the world and like to get this type of coffee, it took us this long and we were refining and refining. And then what we started noticing is after you hear that, and there's a couple of like, specifically, I suppose, there's a place called Bougeot Burger.
The blue place.
Yeah. And I remember going in and talking to the guy who set it up, and It was just, after I walked out, I was obsessed with the place. I was
savage food, though, to be fair.
Exactly. But I mean, I was telling everyone about, like, you wouldn't believe what they did to get this burger right, if you know what I mean. And, like, the all kind of stuff that you wouldn't see in the background. Like, they were doing all this sort of carbon capture out the back, but, like, properly doing it, if you know what I mean. And so you started to realize that basically the loyalty and couponing get conflated a lot, I think. And, like, if I was to ask you or anyone on the street, like, what's your favorite business, what's your favorite restaurant, pub, whatever it is, it's nothing to do with, like, oh, because they give 10% off, or basically they've cut their prices.
Yeah.
It's all to do with an emotional thing. So, like, sorry, that was a long-winded way back to the kind of marketing side that we're looking at building, is that we kind of just want to sit in the middle but enable, basically, businesses to talk to consumers. But we don't want to get in on it. We don't want to interfere.
Do you ever get that pushback, though? Do you ever get businesses going, ah, no, I need to keep the direct relationship?
And that's, to be fair, what we're all about. We're trying to step out of the way, if you know what I mean. We're trying to basically go, like, these are your customers. Like, we don't view them as our, like, app users. We don't think of as our app users, if that makes sense. They're somebody's customers. And both ways, I think that, like, you know, again, because as we're saying, I'm viewing this a lot from my perspective as someone who shops a lot in retail, everyone does.
Yeah.
But what would I want? And yeah, the more you get to know a business owner, the business story, the branding, all that kind of stuff, the more comfortable you get with it. And, like, one of the definitions of loyalty that I liked was walking past a perfectly good alternative, basically. So, you know, when the reason you do that is, in my head, not to do with couponing. It's not to do with, like, you know, it's this. It's because you really like that place. You like the... And some brands are just super good at it. And we probably don't realize, you know, like Starbucks, for example, is one that, again, they kind of just invented that thing of humanizing, you know, like, what's your name? Basically, writing it down on a cup of coffee. And then all of a sudden, this massive chain, they have these interpersonal interactions. And
it's like human psychology. I think people forget so much of business is human psychology.
Exactly. So... yeah, again, back to that kind of product market fit thing. Like, what we're trying to do is we're trying to make it easy, convenient for a business, so that, like, again, we can kind of enable businesses just talk and build a better relationship with their customers. But equally, as you were saying, the subtlety is not to overstep our mark, and basically to make it that it is an authentic kind of, you know, two-way communication channel, basically.
Yeah.
But, you know, ideally, again, if there's certain product that we can kind of automate and make simpler, that's again kind of where we can just facilitate a lot of the, we want to be like outsourced customer engagement, I suppose.
How did you, I've just been thinking about something as you've been speaking there about 2 months and then COVID shut down. How, as young first-time founders, how did you maintain the belief and the determination to keep plowing on?
I think the honest answer is that we always really enjoyed it. We've enjoyed every step of the way, I suppose. And you know, one of the big realizations for me is that I, and Katie, I suppose we'd be in the same boat, that we just love learning. And, like, it was very, I find it really enjoyable, kind of, like, at every stage of the way, everything just gets bigger and broader, and kind of, you know, there's like little areas of business that you know nothing about. And yet what I start to do, I've noticed, is I get little micro obsessions with new stuff as it come along. So, you know, initially it might be stuff like, here's a minor introduction into finance, into law, into marketing, into product, into sales, into this, if you know what I mean. And then you're kind of like a little bit looking under the hood and going, like, geez, that's quite interesting. And, like, then you talk to an industry expert in one of those things and they can unpack that for weeks, you know what I mean? So, And then it just keeps leveling on, whether it's HR or, like, you know, subclasses of these kind of different things, like branding and, you know, so on and so forth. So a lot of it, I think that, like, we just kept on researching and learning and loving that, and then applying it back into the business of kind of, no matter whether we're trying to refine the sales or thinking about scaling or thinking about, you know, the next market, or, like, that kind of trying to constantly test the assumption of, like, is this working? Will this be here next year? Will it be here in 5 years? Will it be here in 10 years? Like, is it sticky? Is it happening?
What did you do when everything closed down? That's a fascinating answer, by the way, because the very most fascinating entrepreneurs I meet are just curious people. They're just curious. They're just, why and why and why and what if and what if. It's really interesting that that was your answer. What, when everything closed down and you're 2 months fresh, coffee shops closed, I know they came back a little bit quicker, but how did you, what did you do?
I suppose the day to day, there was a lot of planning, strategy kind of stuff around, like, is this going to be, I mean, at the very beginning, it was obviously, you know, I think everyone was in that sort of headspace. So like, is this going to be a completely different world? And sort of like scenario one, scenario two. And like, it wasn't so much even writing it down, it's just playing it through. But I think, you know, we tried to go back to the, as Andrew sort of said to me, it's that sort of business in two stages of kind of like, you need to make sure that you have product market fit before you bother to scale kind of stuff. But we did think a lot about scaling. Basically, that was one of the things, again, is to just kind of like try and work out what happens if we try and sell this way, or what happens if we try and sell that way.
So use it as a testing time, a time to kind of dig in and go, okay, what if we do this? What if we do that?
Yeah. And using stuff like, again, we did a lot of field set, like physically walking into a place, again, deliberately, because you learn so much. You go in and you say, like, you know, we're thinking about building this. What do you think? And you get all this feedback as to, like, you know, that's interesting, but I'd really love if it was like this. Thanks very much.
Cool. Kind of stuff. Yeah. So you did that. You went out and did the hard yards. You went to places, chatted them, found out.
And then the hard part, I suppose, was trying to do that online. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not as...
it's totally different. We talked about it over lunch. It's totally... even doing this.
Exactly.
Having a face-to-face conversation with you. We just had a lovely lunch. It's a very different relationship, and that's a very different chat.
No, completely. So I think that, again, was the type of thing of trying to work out... Because again, you kind of get like one sentence answers and stuff like that. Like, what do you think? Like, sounds great. Thanks very much. Or, you know, send on more info, that kind of thing.
And the facial expression is gone. The body language is gone. The subtle hint is gone. Maybe the thing they're holding back on saying isn't said.
And trying to get people to open up, I think, is one of the big, like that example on the Bujo kind of thing of, like, it was, you know, the conversation started with, how are you guys thinking about loyalty, if you know what I mean? And then it just sort of went on, and then he just started like, he just started talking about this big old, you know, learning curve that he'd been on, and all the different parts that he had to do to find the right recipe, the right place, the right brand, the right this, that, and the other. But it's really hard to get that through an email or through, like, even a phone call, as you were saying, that kind of, like, you know, that visual thing and the being in the same room as someone, it is just different. It's tough. So it was definitely a tough patch for sure of trying to, like, again. So it was just about doubling down. It was about focus. Like, again, we kind of just went, okay, well, we're after coffee. And it was, in fairness, you know, it was a good time for coffee as well, as to, you know, if you remember back to
incredible.
The time, it was, that was kind of people's social outing was, where we go for a coffee kind of stuff. But then thankfully things started to open up again, and, you know, it was back into, okay, let's dig into the field sales stuff again.
How did you spread the word? Because that's always the hardest part, I think, of any new app, business, whatever it is, brand. How did you get people familiar with the brand and build a trust? Because it is an element of trust there.
Yeah, I think the there's two parts to this. One, I was really surprised as to how helpful and, you know, eager businesses were to take on the product and to kind of, as we were saying, that thing in particular of to help with the design and stuff. Now, they probably helped that we were, you know, sincerely kind of saying, look, we don't want to build a thing and then impose it on you. We want to, like, you can outsource this to us. You can tell us, what do you think? And then we can basically start to build stuff around, like, what you think, and we can solve your problem. Like, you're having a problem clearly with, you know, whether it's, you give out all these paper stamp cards, you print them, you have no idea, like, do they work? Do they not work? God knows. We just keep doing it kind of stuff. And then, yeah, I think the other part is then when you try to get in the door in the first place, you need to earn it, I think, is, you know, again, with kind of fresh territory. So there's a difference between the people who, we sort of pseudo created the product with, they continue to be incredibly helpful, and it's great. I mean, a lot of them still come into the office and that sort of stuff. We'll just catch up for a coffee and, you know, to talk through again, like, we saw this and we saw that and that kind of stuff. But then selling to completely, you know, because selling is different to creating, I suppose, yeah. if you know what I mean.
And creating's fun and nice and, you know, it's good. You and can be curious and you can have fun in a safe space. Selling's very different.
Selling is very different. But I suppose, you know, that we'd kind of learned that really we had confidence, I suppose, basically, that this was built by these businesses, if you know what I mean. They were telling us, look, this is what we want. So when we were going in, we kind of knew, do you know what I mean? We're not selling dog shit here, if you know what I mean. This is like, this has been...
You'd confidence.
We'd confidence yeah. in what we were saying. And we kind of, again, like it's definitely been a learning process again. I mean, one of the big learnings that I've got is to kind of not sell the features, but to sell the result, if you know what I mean.
Marketing 101, and yet it's the most ignored thing in the world.
Completely. And I definitely started with that of kind of like, so it'll do this and then this happens and then this happens, if you know what I mean. As opposed to just kind of very simply going, look, we can help bring your customers back more often, if you know what I mean, and this is how. And then the really strong part, I suppose, for us was basically just proof points. So that we were able to lean back and say, like, it works, if you know what I mean. Like, we weren't, again, it just boosts the confidence when selling it, is that you're not walking into a place and saying, like, try it out, and that, you know, we're in the background with kind of
yeah.
fingers crossed, like, please God, they stay on and that kind of stuff. You start to learn more and more about, like, how to control, basically, I suppose, which is the second part, you know, which is the, I think we're at this interesting point at the minute where we're crossing from that point of kind of like product market fit into scaling, basically. And so again, the second thing is basically on that is processes. So, you know, but basically when you're trying to sell, et cetera, in the first bit, it's all that kind of like, you're trying to take in knowledge, you're trying to learn, you're trying to put it into the product. But then basically when you have, you know, a core product, and we're going to add and build lots of stuff onto it. But then you come into this scaling mode where, again, you're looking at new markets and you're looking at this kind of stuff, and you quite quickly want to get it in front of people and basically convince them that, look, this is a good solution for you. And then again, that's as I was saying, back to kind of like, you know, worlds and like how big it is. That's just a whole beast, I suppose, kind of... you know, things like pricing, the sales model itself, the sales process, like the sign-up process in particular, leveraging stuff like testimonials in particular is a good one that we can have, I suppose, basically, is that we can fall back on. Like, do you want to go and talk to someone who uses Squid and see that it's helped them? So that is very powerful, I think, going into new markets in particular.
So how does Squid make money?
At the minute, basically, we charge businesses a subscription. But, you know, ultimately, in our eyes, we're basically building a platform. So at scale, the big ambition, I suppose, basically is to turn it into a sort of what's called platform as a service model. And so, again, this is kind of half predicated on a lot of the interest from these bigger companies, but the likes of the different payment companies, food ordering, tipping, etc. That, again, the big focus and the big interest that they have, that they want, I suppose, from us is that engagement rate. So it was just really, anyway, it was kind of partially, again, one of the good points about starting something straight out of college is you have naivety around certain things. You don't know what's good, basically, if that makes sense. But when we were talking to, like, take, for example, Deliveroo, they have, I think, the highest engagement rate in the food and drink area. But then when we were talking to them, they were going like, shit, that's 3 times higher than our engagement rate. And you're just, you know, you're just doing like a subsect of that. And then again, like what we found is the more business types we add on and the more places we add on, the higher, it kind of makes intuitive sense, but the higher the engagement rate. So it becomes that thing of, you know, if you step into, say, one of their minds of, geez, imagine if I piggybacked on that app's back and I doubled the amount of purchases that were going through my platform, you'd literally make twice as much money. So that's, again, it's kind of, you know, it's a two-step phase, I suppose, for us. Is one is that, okay, now it's about focusing and just delivering out the kind of the core product and scaling that into new markets and adding some more kind of engagement features. But then at scale, basically, it becomes this, you know, thing where we can link up with a whole bunch of, different companies, basically, and there's... again, it's about, though, I suppose, delivering the, because again, as I was saying, the fun part is kind of building a product for yourself in some ways. But I was kind of trying to think, like, imagine if it was all in one app, that you didn't have to go on to that app and to that app and to that app. But like, if I just wanted to order food, book a table, do all this kind of stuff, it's all done in the one place. Or if I wanted to make a delivery or blah, blah, blah. for shopping, or if I wanted to book a thing, that it's all kind of centralized into one place. And so I suppose at scale, basically, that's what we're thinking, but it's about getting there in the first place. So it's
how have you guys got to this point? Because that journey is kind of remarkable in a way. Have you bootstrapped? Have you raised funding?
Yeah, we've raised both, I suppose. So initially, I think one of the things that people liked was the fact that we did bootstrap in the beginning. So like we committed our own money, me and Katie. So it was just recycled scholarship money, basically. And then afterwards, we had a few people who came in, and then I suppose we started getting more bigger investors interested. Then they reinvested, and then we got in some more kind of bigger names, etc. So these are kind of just Irish entrepreneurs and etc.
How did that all start, though? How did, because this is the thing I think people don't understand. Like, how do you go from there to here? Like, so you bootstrapped it a little. And then people started getting interested, or you went out and you got them interested, or how does that dance work?
So the honest answer, again, I think, is that when you're young, it's much easier to do things very lean, basically, compared to if you're someone who's got a family or a mortgage or that kind of stuff. So we had that freedom, I suppose, in the very beginning that, like, you know, we could, we did do a little bit of, like, we were doing, maths grinds and that sort of stuff on the side as well to kind of keep us paid, as well as like there was money going out and then this to kind of top us up. So we did have that, I suppose, in our favor. But then I think, you know, for us, a lot of it was like we take the investment stuff very, very seriously, because again, it's kind of thinking about it from the flip side of to imagining myself giving someone money and them coming back and saying it's all gone or something like that. Yeah. Like I've blown it.
I don't know what happened. Just gone.
Exactly. So I, like, we always had a mentality towards it of like treating it with extreme respect, I suppose. And so there are certain times, I think, when you just have this confidence that, like, you know, the limit for us to be able to do X is purely capital. And then at that point, that's, you know, that's a personal thing, I suppose, and it's different for a bunch of different people. But at that point, that feels right to go and raise, basically. And so whether that's, you know, selling more or building new product, et cetera, that's a good time in my head to be able to, because again, it's that sort of like, it's just very easy to sell because you're not lying. You know what I mean? You're not doing this thing where you're starting out and you're sort of saying like, oh, we're going to be absolutely massive based on what? I don't know. Well, you know, I'll figure it out.
The slide.
Yeah, exactly.
Look, it's going up and to the right. Yeah. Look, revenues go up.
Exactly. Look at those projections. You know what I mean?
I love that. And you've kind of said that in a very understated way. But that is a hugely significant point. I think a lot of startups have these visions and these plans and these projections, whereas you were able to go out and raise money, because this is the one question startups have all the time. How do I raise money? What's the secret sauce? You've just outlined the secret sauce there in the fact that you'd started, you'd got traction, you had metrics, and then you were able to coherently present to an investor going, this is what we've done with this. We need this to do that. Very clear, very linear, and put yourself in their shoes.
And I do think, in fairness, it's also probably, it's going to be completely different business to business. But I think particularly in our space, it was a lot of like, we had to prove some stuff, if you know what I mean, that we had to be able to say, to your point earlier, like something like loyalty, it's a pretty obvious idea, if you know what I mean. So to raise a whole bunch of money at the very beginning when you know nothing.
It's going to be a costly lesson.
It's going to be a very costly lesson. Whereas again, what we've done is we've gone very lean now to a point. And I do think in fairness that, you know, investors like this basically with us, is that we've, you know, been very, very efficient with the money that we've raised. And we've now brought it to a point where we can stand over and we can say, look, we're, you know, consistently sort of top five in the charts. We're highest engagement rate of pretty much any food and drink app out there. We're international. We have well over 1,000 customers. We're getting all these inbounds from these different places, and we know how to control and run the business, if you know what I mean. So again, that thing of investing then becomes a kind of like a back to your point. It's basically, okay, now we want to go from here and we want to go to there, basically. Mm. So that's basically why we need to raise. It's not just vanity, if you know what I mean. It's not just to kind of come out and sort of say like we would like to take on a lot of money.
I think that's seen as a barometer of success. Sadly, I think sometimes people confuse raising with success. They think the success comes from the raise, when in reality it's the other way around.
Well, it's also, in fairness, it's probably, it is an experience thing. And, you know, there's certain people that, again, that I look at, and, you know, they just have wealth of experience that, again, I can understand why someone would invest, you know, on day one kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's different for different people and different markets and different products and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, no, I definitely think, I mean, one of the big things that does, at the very beginning, I remember a guy, who, when I was telling him about like what we were planning to do, he said to me, "Are you sure you want to do this? Like, are you really sure you don't want to take a year off or go on a gap year or do something like this? Because once you're in this, and especially once you take investment, you know, like, you're in, yeah. You are 100% in." And so again, I think it's probably that thing that we have always, like, it just feels like a massive responsibility when somebody puts their hard earned money into our business, if you know what I mean. You just feel that, like, we have to put this money to work and make these guys a return, because they've enabled us to do what we love doing, I suppose, as well as kind of like to help further the product. So it's, you know, it's a, yeah, that sort of responsibility feeling, I think, is it makes us approach funding rounds very, very seriously, I suppose.
Yeah, I've a lot of founders have sat in front of me, and I've chatted to an awful lot of founders, and to hear your story and hear the way you tell it, I'm not surprised that you've raised this much money so far, because you tell it in a very coherent, authentic, real way.
Jeez, as I was saying, we have a way to go, and, you know, there's more funding in front of us. But I suppose, yeah, to your point, we've at least been open with people about that we're not going to, again, to your point on the decks and stuff. I have seen people put out decks and they basically say, "We raise once and then the sales basically
magic.
Continue the growth." Yeah. And then we, you know, we need 500K to be a unicorn kind of stuff. I think, again, the big thing for me, honestly, is just the learnings and the confidence basically that gives you. It becomes like controls on a business, if you know what I mean, that you really start to understand, like, okay, when we do this, this happens. But that, you don't know that on day one. Or at least I don't believe for a lot of people that they do know that on day one. You have to go and figure that out.
Are you able to balance this with having a relatively normal life or no?
Absolutely not. No, I don't think.
That was a really loaded question. I knew the answer even before I asked, but I just had to answer just to see what you'd say.
I was talking to Phil about this the other day, the routine part of just, like, I really miss routine. And, you know, we're getting there. And again, it was a point that Andrew made at the beginning, Andrew being one of the investors, is to, he kind of said, like, you need to make this sustainable. You need to make this something that you can do in the long term. So stuff like holidays, stuff like weekends, stuff like sports and, you know, that kind of stuff. And, it's tough though. It's definitely a whole kind of, again, to, you know, it was something we were talking about, but that sort of planning, the organization, for me, I'm just, you know, the it's secondary a lot of the time, you know, to kind of like work out, okay, well, in particular stuff like sports. So that's been really something I need to, it's been the big focus for sort of post September, is that I really want to get back into sports, and I'm going to just make it a routine that, like,
what's your thing? What's your sport of choice?
I used to play a bit of rugby and stuff, so I'm trying to get more back into that kind of stuff, but stuff like five-a-side football and things as well, I'm trying to get back into.
It is important, but again, it's hard. Like, you're in the eye of the hurricane now and you're just going for it. So, like, life is seasons. I think you learn that as you get to be an old man like me. You realize that life goes in cycles, and sometimes you're just in a sprint cycle. Sometimes you got to just bite down on the gum shield and just keep going.
So I suppose there's that. Yeah, exactly. I mean, certainly, like, just exercise actually is probably one of the big things, I think, of kind of like, if you go for a run or you go whatever it is, you just feel better, and it settles the mind, I think, a lot more.
It's core for me. Without that, I struggle bad, because it's not just the physical, it's the mental as well. I find, like, my wife equates me to, like, a golden retriever. She's like, if you hadn't had your exercise, you're just fidgety and you're
wound up.
You're wound up. Exactly it though. And I feel it myself. Like, yesterday I was on the road all day. didn't get to work out. I felt it last night then, whereas today I got up early, got it done. I feel super.
Yeah.
Just from a mental health point of view, I do find exercise just so fundamental.
And then the big flip as well for us is kind of, you know, getting to a team size when you can start to do it actually as a team. So we're looking at things now like setting up a tag rugby team and this sort of stuff in the company, which is fun in its own right. But it's great for kind of culture and that kind of thing.
It has knock-on effects, I think, through the whole thing as well. Even not just for yourself, but for the whole team, just to go, I think, especially when you see leaders and founders getting involved, I think it just shows a balance and it shows, okay, this isn't just a churn and burn exercise. This is a long-term life.
Exactly. And I think back to, you know, a current obsession kind of in learning of mine is this whole cultural thing. And I suppose it's again, just one of those things that certain stuff pops up and it becomes relevant at different stages.
Yeah.
And now that, again, we're in that kind of scaling mentality as to kind of like, okay, we have the product, we know where we're going to go with it. And we've been putting a lot of work basically into like the processes, that sort of like trialing it and getting to sort of a rinse and repeat. But then you start to anticipate, okay, there's a lot of hiring that's going to happen here. And there's going to be a lot of people who come in. And just how important it is. It's one of those things that it's hard. You kind of have to feel it a little bit as the team. Yeah, I don't know, you know, in terms of stuff like, I know you've had a few people who've talked about this before, but the sort of imposter syndrome as to like initially when you get started on something, it's very much just like, focus on the problem.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean? Your problem. But then stuff like, particularly like you hire people in say like the UK or something. And then when they come in and the big turn for me was that basically, and seeing these people come in and that they were meeting me as the CEO and founder, but I wasn't thinking, when I was meeting them, I was kind of going like, okay, this is,
well, that's me. Sorry.
that was, you know, and then you start to realize that, okay, this is different.
It's big stuff.
I mean it purely in the sense of, that the bigger the organization gets, the more important the culture becomes. And again, to Andrew's company, Populo, it was at that sort of time that I was able to go back. And when you walk into his offices, it's an amazing thing. It's sort of something you'd need to experience rather than, I probably won't articulate it very well, but there's a real energy and pride, basically.
You feel it.
You can feel it.
Yeah. Sometimes, like when you go into like a nice restaurant or a really cool coffee shop, you just like it's a vibe, I suppose, kind of the overused term on it now. You just like, it's a vibe, but you just feel something. Exactly. Oh, I just feel comfortable or I feel energized. It's very hard to describe. I think culture is kind of misused a lot of times. I think companies go like, oh, stamp on a bit of culture there.
Exactly.
You know, do Friday beers or something, whatever. It doesn't really matter. Just tick the culture box. Whereas it's a very difficult thing to build.
And it's to like to use that word again, authenticity with your culture is very, again, I just find it really interesting because it has to be, it can't be about like we are, you know, writing down like we are whatever.
What's your spirit animal?
Exactly, that kind of thing. And then circulating it around everyone. It has to come from what people actually do, if you know what I mean. But to kind of codify that into something that you can read is particularly difficult. So we're also kind of in that phase at the minute of kind of just looking at the team and what do we do? And, you know, there are certain traits that we kind of notice, like things like, I know we were speaking about it before, but we do have quite a lot of young people. We have a lot of interns who come into the company and like learning is a big theme for us. I think we're quite open and kind of, you can feel that again. That's the thing of kind of like, it has to be what we do, but like there's a tangible excitement when we say, you know, such and such ex-entrepreneur, ex-founder is coming in to talk to us, to give us a few ideas on sales, marketing, whatever.
That's a great idea, by the way. I love that. I think companies should do that way more.
Yeah, no, I think it's, well, again, it's that thing of like it's kind of the not knowing what you don't know.
I think people are afraid though. I think they're afraid of being people in going, God, they're going to figure out we don't know what we're talking about if we bring them in. Whereas instead, there's no ego with you guys. It would appear from the outside looking in, you're just going, yeah, we need to bring people in to learn. We're all learning together.
Yeah, well, that's certainly what we're trying to do anyway, is because, you know, it's also probably just an obvious logical point, but like a lot of the times, why would you bother go off trying to reinvent the wheel when somebody's already cracked it, if you know what I mean? So whether that's, I don't know, you know, any aspect, as I was saying, be it scaling in particular processes for us now is one that we're trying to talk to a lot of companies that have done something similar. It doesn't have to be in the same space, but if they're, you know, selling to the same market, or they have like a consumer product, or, you know, they're working in whatever, you could just talk to them, and you're trying to ask these open questions as to like, how did you grow, if you know what I mean?
Mm.
And then they'll give you these little snippets that you went, oh, right. And sometimes you do hit those kind of moments where you just go like, oh, wow, that's definitely, we weren't thinking about that as a point. And then, you know, again, the further we go, I started to realize, I think that the big skill is trying to simplify things as opposed to make them more complicated. Whereas I was definitely thinking about it the other way, of kind of like, there's just loads and loads, but it's basically being able to have the idea simplified and then being able to unpack it again and again and again, if you know what I mean. So yeah, I think you get a lot of that learning from talking to different people.
I think simplification is the hardest thing to do, because you kind of feel like it should be harder than it is. You're like, oh no, you don't understand. It has to be done like this. And you're like, does it though?
No, exactly.
Because the best products are simple.
Yeah, or at least in fairness, there is there's an art in being able to simplify. And so that's definitely a big learning for me, and I'm trying to work on it, if you know what I mean. And a lot of the different stuff of taking something and just being able to go, because a lot of the time you kind of get the rough concept and it's clear enough in your head, but then trying to put it out in words, it gets longer. But the likes of, say, for example, Bobby Healy, I remember listening to him talking about like his vision. And sort of, again, for us, we were always kind of going like, we know where we're going and we know what it looked like, and we can draw it for you if you want. Mm. But he had this thing where he was like, oh, I want to replace all road-based deliveries. And I was like, you've caught a lot there.
Yeah.
In like, you know, the use of the word all, if you know what I mean, just implies scale basically and that kind of stuff. And like road-based, it's clear what you're going after.
Yeah.
And like,
but even that alone, that one sentence.
Yeah.
Powerful, beautiful, simple, but so bloody hard to do.
Yes, very hard to do.
I think especially in Ireland, we definitely have a scale problem. I often think this myself when I'm sitting down to plan things. I'm like, oh, next year I want to get this many downloads. And then I'm like, that's pathetic. Like, scribble it out. And then like, oh, what about this? And then I meet my mate James and he's like, that's like ridiculous. Like, 5x that, 10x that. And I mean, need those people though.
Yeah.
Because I think we have we can get caught in the trap of Ireland, right? You think, you know, 5-6 million people, grand, okay, that's our market. But then you go to Manchester and it's bigger than the whole country and you're like, oh yeah, there's more to this. It's a big game.
And that's where I do think it comes back to the enjoyment part though, to be honest. Of like, if you just enjoy the scaling and the growing, like it becomes... It's definitely bad days and all that kind of stuff where it's a bit stressful, but by and large, it's definitely the most enjoyable period of my life so far, if you know what I mean, just doing it. So again, it just makes it much less daunting, I think, to kind of, if you focus on that part of like, the next step is going to be, it's going to be fun. Do you know what I mean? And then like, there'll be another step beyond that, but that'll be fun as well, because it'll be a whole new kind of, so I think that with the scaling thing, yeah, you have to have your targets and that kind of stuff. But if you're actually looking forward to it with anticipation, it puts you in a different frame of mind when you start approaching the thing. It's just exciting, if you know what I mean.
You can tell like one of your culture will definitely be fun anyway, because you guys, the enjoyment just radiates off you in terms of building this business. Because sometimes you talk to founders and it's, you know, you can feel the stress radiating out of them. And I'm sure not every day is up and to the right, but how do you keep yourself level in the middle? How do you not get too high and not to get too low? Or do you?
I think trying to articulate a focus and then having that throughout the team, you can then put metrics against like, these are the focus and this is where we need to go. So the lows a lot of the time basically come from, you know, are we on those metrics? We're not on those metrics. Okay, why not? And then that's a real kind of refocusing moment, and that'll get you very much back onto wait, why? But again, then, you know, a lot of like what we have been good at is trying to get to just that question, why, and then you can sub ask why, and then you'll get to a thing where you can go like, okay, now we can correct that.
Is that your process,
just asking why, I suppose?
No, but is that how you work in terms of, is that how you quantify things? Do you have metrics and then you dig down going, right, why?
Yeah, again, you know, one of the things that I suppose I was taught was, that thing of, let's say with projections, if you know what I mean. If you say like, okay, we're going to have this many, whatever it is, this much revenue, this many downloads, we're going to be in this many places. That's built on a number of different assumptions. And like, if you drill into those assumptions, some of them will be proven to be true, but some of them are unproven to be true. And what the ones that are proven to be true, to be honest, are much easier, basically, because you could just kind of go with confidence. Okay, well, that one's true, so we'll just keep building on it. But then the ones that aren't true, you put a target on it, is what we do a lot of the time. So we say like, well, we want it to be this number,
okay,
in order for it to make the whole thing true. And then so we just really dig on to like, you know, okay, well, in order for that to be that number, what needs to happen? And then so that's where you start to unpack into the detail and into the kind of like, there's more and more layers down into this thing.
I'm now going to peek into the engineer's mind here. I'm now figuring out how you have such a deep engineering mindset.
No, I suppose it comes from sort of like, in fairness, it probably is a little bit of that sort of first principles type thinking, if you know what I mean. That like, you know, to get to here, there needs to be a bunch of stuff that adds up to it. But The big change, as you were saying there, is you could be in the midst of that, and then somebody comes in and they say, actually, it's
Google took us off the App Store.
Yeah, or something. Yeah, exactly. Something like that. But just that you could kind of focus on something. And again, that thing of like, if you can be quite reductive and just say there's only one thing that matters. Again,
that's
it makes
powerful. There's power in that. Going right, forget all the noise, because like you said at the very start of this chat, you know, you can be blinded by the noise and the names and the what you could be doing and should be doing. Especially you guys are definitely hot right now. You're definitely kind of in the vogue at the minute. I'm sure it's very easy to get pushed and pulled around in very different ways.
It's definitely, yeah, to try and kind of, to try and, as you were saying, yeah, just keep that focus, but also keep the options open, I suppose is the... And timing, I know we were talking about this as well, but timing and like when is the right time and that sort of stuff is a big thing that I suppose we've been grappling with for a long while, as to like, you know, do we want to leverage something with a bigger player? When's the right time? And so I suppose, you know, again, there's been a lot of learnings from us, but right now what we were just saying is we're just going to focus internally. We're just going to keep on plowing on with what we do. And what we've seen basically is, look, the bigger we get, the more options there are, you know what I mean? Which is one good thing. So it kind of makes sense as well from a logical standpoint, as to like, you know, if we just keep on focusing on what we do, keep scaling that, keep growing that, we're not doing anything wrong from these other guys' perspectives. We're just figuring out more stuff. We're learning more stuff. So that's, as we're saying, the focus has been basically, and it has been a lot of clarifying though, but to go, okay, no, back to us, if you know what I mean. Let's just focus on what we do and push that.
You've brought me along lovely to my second last question for you. What is next for you guys? Because you've had an absolutely phenomenal couple of years. What is next?
Well, I suppose, yeah, it's this, we're raising at the minute, and I suppose what we're looking to do is expand internationally. So we've got the foothold in a number of these different countries, and we've started to get the in, but we've tested with different stuff. So we do a lot of kind of remote selling type things to just see, is there an appetite for this? And then when you get the tick box, it becomes a...
Okay. So describe that to me. You'll pick like a market or a city or what?
Yeah. So, again, we kind of wanted to initially focus on sort of next door, so the UK. But again, it's just costly and expensive to go to all these different places. So we'd try things like, again, we learned this through COVID, how to sell to people through Instagram, through Facebook, through email. And then again, if you get a few bites, if you know what I mean, you can start building up conviction as to this is a good market. We could, what happens if we send someone there? And then we'll send someone there basically. And then if you get a big sweep up again, just building conviction into like, okay, we can scale in this market. That's one part of what we're doing. But then the other part is there's a big part of building out the product. So again, we have had this thing that you were describing of, it was, you know, built by a guy who kind of came in initially, and it was kind of just quite lightweight type stuff. But now that we've got this, we've got a new CTO, Tom Brady, great name, who's come in.
That Tom Brady? I was wondering what he was doing.
The first day when he came into the office, we had a lot of that with like Tom Brady's coming in.
I'm sure he gets that like never.
Yeah, exactly. But so to, again, we've kind of thought of it again in sort of like orders of magnitude. And, you know, to go from 0 to 100, was one order of magnitude that we were focused on. But then when we got to 100, it was, okay, how do we get to 1,000? And now, so a big part of what we've done is we're just thinking, how do we get to 10,000? And part of that is scaling, but also part of it is scaling the tech. So hence why we kind of went, okay, we need to restructure this and we need to also enhance the product, build out the offering, make it more appetizing to businesses on a marketing perspective so that we can add in more bells and whistles on that front. Mm-hmm. Again, picture being a business and basically being able to completely outsource your marketing to us so that we would basically be able to run campaigns for you. But they don't just pop up on Squid. We'll be able to pop them up on Instagram, TikTok, social media and stuff like that, all from one centralized place at a low price, basically. So it's that, and it's also building into, we are dealing with some of the payment companies to get into, to be able to basically serve more business types. So POS companies in particular, basically building apps for existing POS systems, and then basically we'd be able to get into these different networks. So there's the scaling, and then there's the building out the product. But yeah, the ideal is that we can get up to about 10,000 businesses by the end of this round. So there's a lot of growth. There's a lot to be done basically by this. But then again, in terms of order of magnitude, thinking suddenly you're in that Deliveroo, Just Eat territory, you're in the same order of magnitude then, if you know what I mean. So so that's kind of exciting as well to think what that'll be like.
A funny feeling we'll be sitting here again in a couple of years having a very different chat. That's for another day. What book would you recommend that's had an impact on you personally or professionally?
I think the one that really kind of made me think that we should definitely do this was Shoe Dog. Absolutely loved Shoe Dog in the beginning. I know it's probably one that's been mentioned a few times, but just what I really loved was the small little wins. Because that's exactly what it feels like. It's the small little things, not when I loved how in that story, it wasn't about like, you know, I started a thing and now it's a multi-billion dollar company. It was, you know, it was so much fun getting it from naught to into this little thing. And then from there into that little thing. So I absolutely love that. And then the other one is a book called The Hard Thing About Hard Things. and it's very literal. Basically, it's almost like an instruction manual for a founder. And so I thought that was really, it's very, very brutally honest kind of stuff on just, again, that full range of things. But it's brilliant, I thought.
Two absolutely cracking reads. Matthew, where can people learn more about Squid? Where can they download it? And where can they learn or get in touch with you?
So you can download Squid on Google and Apple Store, just under look up Squid. Find out more about us, I suppose, on our website, www.squidloyalty.ie. And if anyone wants to get in contact with me, it's my email is matthew@squidloyalty.ie, M-A-T-T-H-E-W.
Class. Matthew, absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks a million. No, thanks very much for having me. Appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, please hit subscribe on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts, as it really does help the podcast grow and reach new people. If you want to learn more about the podcast, go to mrgaryfox.com. I'll see you back here in a couple of days for a brand new episode.